Hi, I'm Luke, and I'm the founding partner of the Mission Wealth Management Group at UBS, where we work with entrepreneurs of growth companies. I have always had a deep level of respect for entrepreneurs, how they have had such bold ideas, risked everything to see it through. For the better part of the past 20 years, I have made it my mission to meet, learn from, and work with passionate entrepreneurs, and have had a blast doing so. The purpose of this podcast is to showcase various entrepreneurs whom have given me inspiration, allowing us to peek inside their minds and to learn what has caused them to create these businesses, share the highs and lows they've experienced, and learn where they draw their inspiration. Welcome, everybody, to the first inaugural edition of Entrepreneurs Insight with Luke Irvin at UBS. Today, we have the pleasure of interviewing Ryan Shorthill from Positive Adventures. I know Ryan through Entrepreneurs Organization, the local San Diego chapter, which he's currently the president of. And so thanks, Ryan, for joining us this afternoon.
It's a pleasure to be with you.
Great. You know, to get started, if you could just share with the listeners a little bit about Positive Adventures and what led you to start the company.
Sure. Well, I'm originally from the great state of New Hampshire, and it was pretty cold back there, and I realized I needed a change. I was a school teacher in Boston at Excel Academy, and a friend asked me for a ride. I was from San Diego. I gave her a ride out here, and I basically saw the area for 3 days, went back to the devastating nature of the New England winter, and said, geez, I've got to get back. And so I came out, and shortly thereafter started an organization which was in alignment with my schooling at university, which is outdoor experiential education and facilitation. And that's basically training people on ropes courses, offsite, things like that. And I had the remarkable, fortunate time of starting it just before the financial meltdown and all corporate money was about to be frozen. So it was an arduous and difficult time in the beginning. But I realized that a lot of the communities that we are a part of and the businesses where people work, they could always use more support and help with resolving conflicts and working on projects in more efficient ways. And that's basically what all of my training had led me up to become, was someone that could support people within businesses working with other people.
Sure. So I think all of us here in San Diego can relate to gravitating towards this great city of ours. Now, I know you have always had a strong interest in volunteering and working with people and helping people. How much was that a part of starting this company?
Well, you know, it's interesting. I wrote a paper on it once, but my first volunteering as an individual, I was probably about 16 years old, and I had a crush on a gal by the name of Charlotte. She said, if you want to go out, we can go out and work at the soup kitchen at the church that I'm a part of. So one of my very first dates I ever had in my life was serving homeless at a soup kitchen, and I realized it felt really good to apply myself. And they were so grateful and supportive of me being there that I realized that that's really where it's at. And, you know, my mother and father both spent careers in service. My mom was a military nurse. My father retired as a lieutenant colonel and Vietnam veteran. And so when I built my business, after I had traveled actually a fair amount around the world, I realized that the world needed a lot of help and that there was a lot of suffering. And it was always on somebody else's shoulders, whether it was churches, nonprofits. And so I thought to myself, what can the business community do to make a lasting and positive impact in the communities that they're a part of? And so that's where I really started delving into corporate social responsibility, or as I like to call it, corporate caring. And that's when we would take 200 to 300 people from a different office or whatnot, or maybe it was only 50 people, or maybe it was 5,000 people. And we would deploy them across America under the guise of team development and staff training. And we would have them redo old folks' homes and women's shelters and, you know, homeless shelters and all of these different projects that promoted a lot of good. And the good just felt right for everybody involved. And it wasn't just another retreat at the fancy Marriott and golfing. It was building bicycles for kids who had never had their first bike. And I'm sure most listeners out there can really think about that time that they got their first bike, whether it was under their Christmas tree or from a yard sale with their mom or whatnot. And I just wanted to keep recreating that feeling because service to others helps us all. And I just thought that that should be part of our DNA and make a lasting impact in this very short, brief life that we get to be a part of.
Absolutely. So I think we all owe this Charlotte a great amount of gratitude.
Very much so. I wrote her a letter once and basically told her all of that. I said, you had no idea how much that impacted me and how much I've, you know, all these years later, it's still very much a part of almost every single thing we do, from helping veterans to the elderly, to pets, to kids going in for surgery, where the corporate groups get to make capes for all the little kids so they can feel like superheroes. It's just, it's been awe-inspiring, and I find myself often tearing up on stage just by the amount of truth and beauty we get to witness.
That's great. And then, so in terms of some of the, you do a lot of corporate retreats, a lot of team building, but also there's a youth component, programs for youth and things like that. Is it normally like schools that come and participate, or is it just like a lack of a better word, a summer camp kind of programs?
Well, all actuality, we do a lot of youth programming. And that is oftentimes with whole grades. So we'll get an 11th grade class to go out for a week in Joshua Tree. We'll do some science-based curriculum, some team development, astronomy, rock climbing, caving, travel in the backcountry, self-care. And one of the amazing things that happens on those kinds of programs is you're encouraging everybody to look out for their hiking group, their trail group. So if we have 150 kids out there, they're in 15 or 10 groups, 10 kids or whatnot, whatever it may be. And those kids are all looking out for each other. They're making sure they've got their sunscreen and their water bottles and their hats, and they're doing navigation, and everyone gets leader of the day. And so we've had a remarkable run of having just so many different kids out on programs, from inner city charter schools to having, you know, Puff Daddy and Snoop Dogg's kids. We even have one of the children that passed away in the helicopter with Kobe Bryant's bird. Like, we had that student on program, so we've really covered the spectrum of youth in the area to have them have an opportunity to live, learn, and grow outside of doors. And it's been a remarkable aspect of my career that I'm so grateful to be a part of.
That's fantastic. And I was noticing on the website you work with a lot of kind of the Fortune 500 companies as well as, you know, some smaller companies. Is that, you have a good mixture there, or is it something you try to focus on particular segments?
You know, We understand that our target market and target client is anytime there's a group of 7 or 8 people or more. And so we might have an executive team from Atlantic Records going out for a 4-day retreat, or we might have a YPO group from Chicago going down the Colorado River, or we might have 5,500 employees from at Grady Children's Hospital, which is the largest children's hospital in California, which is probably the 8th largest economy in the world. We've had every single one of their employees go through curriculum that I built. And it's remarkable, from the doctors to the orderlies to the cafeteria to the nurses. And it's just unbelievably rewarding. You know, we had them learning healthy eating habits, making juice smoothies with different recipes. They all learn myofascial massage, yoga, meditation, journaling. And it's really a testament to where the new economy is heading, where it's just not about the golf and the fancy retreats. Not that there's anything wrong with golf or staying at a really nice hotel, but there's a need in a lot of these companies, big and small, where they've got to focus on their people, you know, and focus on what they're doing for the people so that it's not just profits. And so we call it the triple bottom line: people, planet, and profit. So it really doesn't matter the size. We've had the small dentist firm with 8 people come out for an afternoon, and we've had some, you know, Google and Apple and all those big companies call us on a regular basis. So I think we've really struck a chord with humanity.
That's great. Now, shifting gears a little bit, so being an entrepreneur, building this company, what have some of the biggest challenges been that you have faced in starting this company?
Boy, you know, in the beginning, it was downright difficult. I had a drum kit that I had to sell. I sold my car. I actually was using a borrowed church computer in the beginning. I had to take out enormous loans, put things on credit cards, with this unyielding belief that if I persevered, that it would one day work. But so many people told me I should quit. I hit up my uncle once for a small loan, and he actually told me no, which was pretty devastating. But that only fueled me to try harder and work harder. But in the beginning, I didn't have the community. I had just moved to San Diego. My nearest family member was 3,000 miles away. I had only a very limited and small friend group, which was my friend I drove out and her friends, and she shortly thereafter my arrival got married and moved away. And so I felt alone. I felt destitute. There was no money to be had. I was picking the fruit in the neighborhood on the trees just to try to get ahead, you know, a dozen eggs for the whole week. I had lost a lot of weight. I had to sneak into a college class to learn how to build a business plan. The teacher had taught me and said, you know, you're asking me to risk my job to stay in here. And I said, listen, what's the risk to not let a committed individual get this important information? So in those earliest days, I had the USD Poverty Clinic help me set up my paperwork. I hadn't made hardly any money moving out here. And then shortly thereafter, you know, the economy completely tanked. So in the earliest days, I actually was on unemployment check. The only time in my entire life, I was on unemployment for 4 months, and I rolled every one of those checks into building my future multi-million dollar business.
Wow. That whatever it takes attitude and perseverance is something I'm sure a lot of fellow entrepreneurs can relate with. Now,
it's the New England way. Never give up.
That's right. That's
we got
right.
No shovel.
Yeah. The live free or die motto of New Hampshire.
Right.
Well, tell us. So speaking of the perseverance and the building it, you know, I'm sure Entrepreneurs Organization has been a big support group for you. Can you share with us a little bit about, you know, the work they do, how they helped you, and, you know, how that experience has enriched your life and your business?
Sure. So the Entrepreneurs Organization is the largest collection of successful entrepreneurs in the entire world, with over 14,000 members and probably well over 190 countries. I'm just guessing on that one. But basically, I got called by a forum group, and they all meet in groups of 10 or so, and that's called a forum. And one of them called me to do a ropes course. And after the ropes course, one of the folks said, I'd like to take you out to coffee and tell you about a new program at EO called the Accelerator Program. And that was for companies 250 to a million. And I fell in that category. I was probably around 500,000 or 600,000. And he took me out. He introduced me to the Accelerator Program. And within 2 years, I was able to scale my business well past a million. I had really great mentors. I had people looking out for me. I had people that could shorten the learning curve, that had introductions to people that could really change the way I was thinking and viewing things. The amount of books that came my way elevated so much of what I was doing. And then I went from that into being on a committee member, because I've always been volunteering and done board service my whole career. And so I was on a large committee putting on a big event called Alchemy. And then I moved into several years of the learning chair, where we put on phenomenal events with all sorts of luminaries, dignitaries, and, you know, celebrities, sports athletes. And that really felt like it propelled and advanced my life experience tenfold. And then from that, I went into the presidency and ran for president and became president of what's called a mega chapter. We're about 200 members, which is a very large chapter, one of the biggest in North America and probably in the top 10 out of all 14,000 members around the world. And then COVID happened. So, you know, EO has been tremendously rewarding. It's supported me through so much. When my brother suddenly passed away, my forum had all wrote me letters that were deeply moving, and it was wildly impactful. And I'm so incredibly grateful for all the people that have looked out for me, and the amount of emotional intelligence that we've been trained in is just phenomenal. I think it's the entrepreneur's chance to change the world in the highest and most best possible way. And if there was another more powerful way of doing it, I'd be somewhere else.
Absolutely. It's in my limited amount of experience with EO, I've noticed it's a very special group of people that, you know, have a family type vibe. And, you know, so I think you do have the distinction of being a wartime president then through this COVID nightmare where we find ourselves in.
Yeah. You know, the nice thing about COVID was, is if you could say that, is there was a silver lining in that we were able to rebrand half of our organization into Onyx offsites and trainings. For over 15 years, we did 50% of business with corporate groups and 50% of business with mostly private schools and schools. And so we saw that there was a need to pivot and divide the market channels in a stronger and more robust way. So now we have two entities, the Onyx Offsite and the Positive Adventures. Positive Adventures is working primarily with the youth. Onyx Offsite is primarily working with the corporate groups. And we've pivoted to do a lot more online and Zoom training. And what's unique about that is all throughout my career, we'd get calls about a team, half the team that's in Australia, half the team that's in Albuquerque, and, you know, or, and the executives are in Chicago. And so in a unique way, we've been practicing for this moment all this time. So now that we're doing Zoom and keeping people connected, we have a whole plethora of different programs, from pizza family nights, scavengers, to escape rooms, to wine tasting, mixology, all the way up to the more coaching and the consulting program. So, you know, you've got your team development, you've got your team training, your team building. So there's all these different versions of something we've been doing for so long. So in a weird way, society has led us right to where we've always been. And when we're really leading the charge on that.
That's great. And then just to clarify one point you made about the EO Accelerator, the 250,000 to a million is revenue, right?
That's the revenue. And to be an EO, you have to have a million and above qualifying business. Mm-hmm. And so the Accelerator program says within 3 years, they'll help you get to above a million, provided you meet some basic criteria, which is 250 and above. You're willing to meet on a monthly, and then also do quarterly learning. And interestingly enough, I became an EO Global trainer. So I'm part of the EO Global training community as an Accelerator trainer. So on any given day, I might be training CEOs in Qatar and Indonesia and Dubai, or I might be training the Accelerators in Austin or Dallas or Detroit. So it's been wildly rewarding to give back to the program that gave me so much.
That's great. And then shifting gears to the, talking about some of the biggest challenges you faced, what have been some of the biggest successes you've enjoyed with your time at Positive Adventures and your new venture here?
Well, there are just so many successes. To know that I'm a small town kid from the forest of New Hampshire, where most of my friends are kind of just hanging out and fishing. And I've been all over the world going to these great global events. And, I would say one of the biggest successes was we did a program once where we got a call to do a day long training for a group of kids on the 4th of July, and they asked us to do it for free. And I didn't think I could get any staff to work on the 4th of July. Most people want to go down to the beach and party, watch fireworks. But I got 4 or 5 committed staff to show up, work for free. And we had 50 kids on a ropes course, and every one of them were affected by HIV and AIDS. Some of them had it. Some of their parents had died from it. So they were affected, not necessarily infected. And at the end of the, at first, I was very hesitant, nervous going to work with that population. And about 36 seconds of them getting off the bus, I realized they were kids just like the rest of us. And at the end of the program, which I had completely forgot that they had even had this experience because they were just so bright-eyed coming from LA, from the city. At the end of the program, they had a stand in the center of the circle and they sang us this beautiful thank you song. And me and the staff, we just wept like babies. I couldn't contain myself. Something inside of me was so indelibly triggered at that moment that you can't buy that experience. You just can't. To me, when I think of my business, biggest successes, it's not the big contracts and, you know, making the big payouts, it's knowing that we made such an impact in people's lives that in return, we got that same impact tenfold. And I think there's a whole world of service out there that a lot of people haven't tapped into to get that buzz. And to this day, there's still not really a greater buzz than that thank you song. Or to know we made the largest donation to the Atlanta Women and Children's Day Shelter. And so when I think of successes, sure, I've got to make drinks for Lance Armstrong and have dinner with LaDainian Tomlinson. And, you know, I got to hang out and freestyle rap with Jerry Rice. But at the end of the day, I think the biggest successes are knowing that I help pay for my staff student loans, that I help cover the cost of my students, my staff births, or, you know, we sent 15 turkeys to my staff husband who was deployed in Iraq. Like, to me, that's what business is about. It's the wins are really knowing that we're making a broader and deeper difference in the hearts and souls of the people that we are connected with. I mean, it does feel great when you close a huge sale or you make a big, big paycheck, but I've never really done any of this work for the paycheck. I do it for the alternative pay I get from seeing the people's faces change when they get their first bicycle as a child, or when you're able to resolve the conflict of a team that's worked together for years and has always had this deep-seated frustration with each other, and to see them light up and reconnect on a higher level is just, that's what it's all about for me. I can't speak enough on that and how much it means to me to know that the legacy that I've been a part of and to help co-create has just been, it's outstanding and astounding.
Sure. Like,
I would have never have thought when I was 13 years old riding my bike up and down the one-way street that this would be where I'd be at now. I really can't even fathom it, to be honest with you. And Lord knows where I'm headed next. Who knows what's going to happen in the next 10 years.
Absolutely. And knowing you, I know this is genuine, your passion for volunteering and helping people. But, you know, one big trend we've seen in the overall business community, whether it's private companies here in town or large Fortune 500 companies, is this theme of ESG, right? Environmental, social, and governance. And that social or community capital is priceless. But it can help drive actual top line revenues, right? So I think that's probably not what your prime motivation is, but it's good old fashioned karma, right? Putting good out to the world, you know, good things will come back to you. So I applaud you for that.
Well, you know, just to chime in real quickly, I mean, that's where the new economy is heading. And we already see that all the time, is the consumer is willing to pay more if they know the social causes or the core values of the organization is more in alignment with them. And we know that that's where society is heading. So if you sell a widget and it's just priced at whatever it may be, but the next company sells the identical widget, but 10% goes to environmental projects and supporting children and entrepreneurship, the consumer is willing to pay more to support the company doing the social cause. Because all too often, we think it's the, you know, religious institution's responsibility, the government's responsibility. And the American people, I think, are demanding more. They want to see more and do more to help one another. And that's where you see this momentum in so many social causes and all of these just social give back based programs. I mean, you look at Habitat for Humanity, like they're doing great work, and so many other companies are doing the same thing. And so for the listeners out there, I encourage and implore you to look at, you know, a monthly give back or a quarterly or even an annual, because just writing a check to a nonprofit is amazing, but it doesn't necessarily mean it's enough, because your staff want to think, feel, and breathe that feeling as well. And they have options. They don't have to work for you. They can work other places. And I even have a story of a staff that had two masters and a PhD, and she started, you know, working for me for a very small amount of pay. And I asked her, I said, you can get any job anywhere. You're a college athlete and went to a top school. And she said, yeah, but all those other places might pay me more, but I wouldn't feel good going home at night, because you're offering me freedom, purpose, autonomy, and your core value is family first, and I want to have a child. And so I think that's really where we're at with that.
Absolutely. And like I said, we're starting to see it already in the large public company, you know, Fortune 500s with like Starbucks, right? They're willing to pay for their employees' education and things like that. So, and that's just
impact
one of
investing. That's where it's all headed. Impact investing, all that venture capital, they're all looking at impact investing.
Absolutely. So you're well ahead of the curve there. Now, what was if you can point to a moment in time or an era of time, you know, what was the inflection point where you really realized, hey, this is a good business, this is going to thrive, and this is going to work out for me? I know that's with all startups, that's, you know, like you said, the struggles you faced early on. What was that moment in time that you realized?
Well, you know, there's a couple. The first is, you know, when we were hustling and grinding to get a $2,000 or $3,000 contract, and we started landing some $5,000 contracts, and we thought we were just high on the horse at that point. And we used to say, well, I just can't wait until we can hit a $10,000 contract. And then before you know it, we're at $200,000 contracts. And so when we got to the $10,000 and $50,000 contracts, it really seemed like, holy cow, like we're not going anywhere. Like this actually is working. You know, we're going to pay down the debt. We're going to move into bigger offices. We need to hire more staff. And then the second is when people, I would say things, or our staff would say, oh, we work at Positive Ventures. And someone would say, oh, we've heard about you all. Oh, I saw you in USA Today. Oh, I saw that news clip about you in the news. And that's when it got really crazy because, you know, I was in a band in college and no one ever heard of us. But, you know, there's got to be a point where that college band hears their song on the radio that goes, oh, my goodness, like we are on the radio. And that's kind of how I felt when we like ended up in USA Today in the front page of the business section or some of these other awards we received. And there we were on stage in front of thousands of people getting these awards. And we're like, wow, this is like we're bona fide. This is no longer something that started in a garage. I lived in a garage. And true story, I literally was in the garage laying on the ground trying to start this business. And now here we are all this time later, and we've deployed programs all over the world. I've even got to ride a stallion in Egypt working with Booz Allen in the Egyptian Navy. So it's those moments where you can't even believe it's really your life, or at least I can't.
Gotcha. Now, I can't help but ask, what kind of band were you in and what instrument did you play?
So I was in two bands, and I played the drum kit, but both bands, we had two drummers. So music like the Allman Brothers and Santana, the Grateful Dead, they all had 2, 3, 4, or 5 drummers. And so I had played hand percussion in junior high and high school, would bring out the hand drums and the guitars. This is all pre-social media and cell phones. And so when we were bored, we didn't consume, well, besides beer, but we actually created or produced. And so we played hand drums and sang songs with the guitars out in the woods camping. And then that just kind of gravitated to the drum kit. The drum kit I sadly had to sell to start my business and haven't had one since. But we just jammed. We wailed. We wanted to make music people could dance to. And we had some pretty big gigs. You know, we determined the size of our gig by the amount of kegs that were there. So we had a 9-kegger one time at a college party at some house. We thought we were pretty big.
That's great. I was in a band myself, so I like that.
Oh, yeah? What instrument did you play?
So I played the bass guitar, and I've since switched to the ukulele. And that's kind of where that's the extent of my musical skills there. But
we need to get an EO and sponsor jam band together. We need to get it going.
I am starting a one-man band with my ukulele called Lukulele. So, yeah, that's what I'm working on now. Initially started it just to sing children's songs to my, you know, 3 and 5 year old, but now it's kind of gotten a hold of me and I can't stop.
Nice.
Now,
it works.
Yeah. So, you know, where do you draw your inspiration and what words of wisdom could you offer to other entrepreneurs that are, or aspiring business owners, people that are looking to start their own enterprise?
Well, to be frank with you, I never watched much sports growing up. And so a lot of my heroes weren't athletes. You know, when I was in high school and all that, kids idolized a lot of different athletes and whatnot. But for whatever reason, I gravitated towards books like the Tao Te Ching, you know, The Four Agreements, Paramahansa Yogananda's Autobiography of a Yogi. And I felt like if success was going to be real and bona fide and lasting, it had to come from within. And it couldn't just be the hedonic treadmill of buying more material, buying more things, having storage units to store more things. And so a lot of my inspiration came from what I would call my heroes, which would be the people that were practicers of agents of change. You know, you've got Mother Teresa, Martin Luther King, John F. Kennedy, Robert F. Kennedy, all of these different, Abraham Lincoln, Gandhi, all of these people created monumental shifts in humanity. And many of them were assassinated for it. They were taken right out for the level of change that they were bringing. And I've always thought, if one day I could reach their level to be a part of that group, you know, not just a billionaire class or not just, you know, the fastest mile or any of those things, those all have their place too. But I thought, geez, you know, if I could emulate all of them, there's no way I could go wrong. There's just no way, because I might not be to their level. I might not be the agent of change that they brought. But if I could at least aspire to be like them, then I know I'd have a seat at the table later on in life. And, you know, it treated me well this far. You know, I don't have the fanciest car. I don't own a big home. I don't own any home. But I certainly feel at home within myself. And I think that's almost priceless.
Okay. That's interesting. Usually you hear other business, you know, Elon Musk being an inspiration, or the Jeff Bezoses or Warren Buffett's, those kind of things. But these Mother Teresa, Martin Luther King Jr., Gandhi, these are all non-business people. So that's very interesting. Is it safe to say, you know, for the next generation of entrepreneurs, kind of follow what inspires you, and if you can find a way to earn a living off of that, go for it?
Yeah, without question. I mean, if I did have a business person that I looked up to, it would be Richard Branson, because he, along with me, has had really tremendous learning differences, learning disabilities. My whole life, I was told that, you know, I wouldn't amount to anything. I couldn't sit still. I just had these tremendous learning disabilities. And Richard Branson was told the same. You know, mm-hmm. He was dyslexic. He was a poor student. But, you know, like, so was an Albert Einstein. He failed at algebra. So I would say for the aspiring entrepreneur, it's do what feels right within you. Listen to your intuitive guidance network and believe that what is right within you is right within the world. Mm-hmm. And also get good mentors, read a lot of books, and pay attention and listen to to the elders, and they'll help guide, sculpt, and form who you will become.
Sure. And, you know, sometimes what people feel are their weaknesses can turn out to be some of their strengths. And speaking of the learning disabilities, I'm not exactly familiar with your situation, but, you know, one thing I do know and admire about you greatly is your amazing amounts of energy. Okay. Like every time I've been around you, that's just, when you walk in a room, you have this presence of energetic and, you know, positivity and things like that. You know, where do you get this? Does this come from your experience, or your, you know, the inspirational leaders that you followed? Is this just from the volunteer work that you've done? This is the driving force, but where do you get your energy, and can you bottle some of that and send some to me?
Well, you know, early on, again, when I was looking at how to be successful in one's life, a lot of it came down to internal things like the foods that you eat, the sleep that you get, the company that you keep. And so my whole life, I've tried to, not religiously, but focus on a plant-based diet, get plenty of rest, make sure there's leisure time, make sure I'm dancing and making music and writing poetry, because that ultimately will be fulfilling. But at the same time, that doesn't mean I don't come with my own shadows and darkness and bouts of depression. But I think at the end of the day, life is so incredibly short. And I've lost so many people close to me that I don't want to spend my days wallowing in the sadness and the pain of the loss, but rather to honor all of them and to really, we get this one life. And we got to really make sure it's a sure shot. You know, I want this life to be the game-winning buzzer shot, not just sitting on the bench wondering what's going to happen next, and then we all pack up and leave. Sure. So I think, A, I was born with a fair amount of attention deficit and plenty of energy, but I find really that when harnessed and applied, it's truly been a blessing in disguise for however detrimental it seemed by everyone else's judgments. When you look at people today, they drink coffee by the gallon. They buy energy drinks every single day. Every single person wishes they had enough energy to get through the day. And there's a subsection of us that have that energy. And because of that, we can start working at 5 in the morning and, you know, work until as long as we want without ever really getting tired. And I think that I've learned to harness that. You know, I shoveled a lot of driveways as a kid where everyone else got tired. I was raking in the dough.
That's great. What is next for you in Positive Adventures?
Well, we've rebranded the organization, and so we've got Positive Adventures still and the Onyx offsite. I was fortunate enough to have the wonderful and talented Melissa J. Cox Lopez from EO San Diego. She is one of the most admired CEOs in the chapter, award-winning CEO, and she had an exit. And we found out that we had a lot of synchronistic similarities. Her birthday is the same birthday as my late brother, Mike, who was my best friend, who taught me most of my chops. Her child's birthday is the same birthday as my child. You know, we were both raised with Catholic guilt. Her house is halfway down the street from my office. And we've just always really gotten along. So for right now, I've stepped down as the CEO, and I'm now the executive chairman. I'm doing a lot more coaching and consulting and speaking, and I'm really focusing a lot of my time and energy is raising my 10-year-old Calliope and my 5-year-old Jasper. And as a single dad, I'm spending a lot of time making sure that they know how much I care about them, and organizing fun and useful learning experiences. And in fact, I EO'd her lemonade stand, so I've got it down to the hour. I know her labor efficiency rate. I know what our average run rate, burn rate is. She knows all of it now at 10 years old. And amazingly, we're doing $50 an hour on a 2-hour run any single time we set it up. So I said, oh, you want that new iPad? It's just 5 lemonade stands and we can pull it off. So that's what's really next for me, is how to be an exceptional father before the children grow up. And they do grow up so fast. For all of you out there with children, the elders have said it all along, but your kids grow up so fast. I have 7 years left with my daughter before she graduates high school, and I can't even believe that.
Wow. How are the profit margins on the lemonade stands these days?
Oh, it's absolutely killing it. It is like 85, 90%. Sometimes people will walk up and give her a $20 bill for one cup just to be able to prop her up and say, you do that. And she's like, raises her fist, you know, women in business. I'll come back and give her 5 more. It's just insane.
And I'm sure you're a pretty good salesman for that, for those businesses as well.
I can only give them the tools. It's up to them to build what it is that they want. But they always want to quit 10 minutes before they hit the $100 mark. So that's been what I've been teaching her. I say, oh, honey, I know it's dusk, but you're at $96 and, you know, give it 5 more minutes. Let's hit the 100.
I love it.
And then sure enough, it eventually happens. And I think that's a great takeaway for all of us.
Great. Well, Ryan, thank you so much for taking the time. Before we let you go, how can people get a hold of you? And if they have questions or inquiries about Onyx Offsite or Positive Adventures, or just, you know, to learn more about you personally.
Yeah, so I always say I'm available 24 hours a day, 24/7. I always have time for you. You never have to do this alone. Keep your chin up, and when you can't, give me a call. My telephone number is 603-512-3397. My email address is Ryan, R-Y-A-N, at positiveadventures.com. That's plural. And you can also check out the website, positiveadventures.com. Onyx is just about to launch, and we'll be able to share that with you soon enough. But if any of you are struggling, if any of you need someone to just talk to, bounce ideas off of, or you just want to call and celebrate a win, I am here for you. Whether it's 2 a.m., 2 p.m., there is no bad time to call me. You're always invited. You're always welcome to do so, and we'll get through this together.
Awesome, Ryan. Well, I can't thank you enough for being the guinea pig here on our first edition of the podcast. So with that, thank you so much for taking the time. I look forward to seeing you soon, hopefully in person one of these days. And yeah, have a great evening.
Yeah, I'm proud of you. You're a founder, podcast founder. Keep up the good work. You just got to stick with it. And before you know it, you'll have 1 million listeners.
All right. Although now I'm thinking about switching gears to lemonade stand. So might have some competition.
That's where the money is, baby. All right. You have a great day. Thanks for having me. I appreciate you and your staff for making this happen. And we'll talk to you later.
Sounds great, Ryan. Take care. Well, I'm not sure about you, but I loved hearing Ryan's story. His perseverance when facing adversity, his passion for helping others, and then building a business around just that was very inspiring. And whether or not you share his passion for volunteer work or going above and beyond taking care of employees, I would urge every entrepreneur out there to be a good steward in the community. Not only does it increase your company's image in your local area, it could also increase the value of your company. Now, when you're looking to sell a company, valuations are based on a fairly simple formula. It's tangible assets, think cash, equipment, accounts receivables, things like that, and intangibles, also known as goodwill. And along with intellectual property and client lists and things like that, one of the elements of goodwill is how you treat your employees, customers, and the community at large. This is the, in this world of ESG, environmental, social, and governance, this is exactly the S part of that equation. And it reminds me of a quote from the late Marshall Field, who sold his department store back, I think, in the late 1800s to Macy's, once said that goodwill is the only asset that competition cannot undersell or destroy. Thanks for joining us on Entrepreneurial Insights. If you have enjoyed this, please rate and subscribe to the podcast on Spotify. Email us at missionwealth@ubs.com with comments or suggestions. Visit our website at ubs.com/team/missionwealth, or connect with me on LinkedIn or Twitter at Luke SW Irvin. You've been listening to Entrepreneurial Insights with Luke Irvin at UBS.